Hello, top of the morning. This is behavioral scientist Tanola Oliver. And thank you so much for joining me on this edition of the Making of the Mogul radio show, where the dream is free and the hustle is sold separately. So I have a few things I want to talk to you about this morning. And then I will slide on out of your way, right? So what have I been doing? I have been recreating some modules for various courses. And it's always rewarding for me to teach, right? That's what I enjoy doing. And so preparing those modules it's rewarding for me. So anyway, let's talk about Curtis 50 Cent Jackson. So what I recently found out is that Curtis 50 Cent has not released an album since 2014. However, he is still making $900,000 per concert, right? He released that information in a recent interview. And this is what I want to talk about around that particular topic, is that, so I recently had an interview. I feel terrible about the interview that I recently had an interview with a gentleman named Scott Morrell. He has produced two small short films, and we were just talking about the art of entertainment, and I'll unpack some of that later on. But I feel terrible because for the first time, so I have a format that I follow when I do in my interviews. Number one. I don't need to talk about it publicly, but there are some things that I do very specifically that help me to maintain the integrity of my brand, particularly when it comes to interviews, because you all know that I'm very particular, number one, about who I interview. And then number two, I am very particular about the format, the feel, and the texture of the show, right? And in order for me to maintain that, I follow these very specific steps so that I know the how the interview will flow, or have some understanding of how the interview will flow, protecting myself, my brand, as well as ensuring that we don't taint the brand of the people that we interview. In all of that, part of that is testing my studio to ensure that myself and the interviewee, that the audio of it is performing properly, right? In this particular interview, the vocals, I've never had an interview where I went back to listen to it and it wasn't really audible, which is so strange to me, because I thought that it was his New York accent. And in my me trying to not be offensive about his accent, I thought that it didn't have anything to do with the equipment in my studio. Turns out that it was the equipment. And when I went back to listen to the interview, I can barely understand anything. So I am trying to find a way to maintain the integrity of the interview and write up the interview, but I won't be able to scribe the interview exactly because the audio was not there, right? And for me, that's a little frustrating because I think it was one of the, probably one of the most lengthy interviews that I've probably participated in with this particular show. However, I am working through that. But one of the things that we talked about that reminded me of when I read the article from the interview that 50 Cent talked about here, this is, he hasn't released an album since 2014, and he's still receiving $900,000 per concert to perform. For me, that is a testament about what happens when we pursue passion more than we pursue money, right? Obviously, like I think it was with his, when he first produced Power, he was only making $15,000 per episode with Stars. And that was, and he was a mogul already, right? And Stars only negotiated for him to receive $15,000 per episode. And he proceeded to agree to those particular terms. And understand me, like, there's a line of demarcation between your ability to do something because you're financially stable enough to do it and your ability and willingness to do something because, and I don't want to use the word out of desperation, but because you undervalue what you bring to the table. And so 50 Cent is in a very unique position where he earns enough income in other parts of his business model that it was okay for him to receive, though he knew he was worth more, $15,000 per episode with Stars, because it would not impact the business model for G-Unit Films and Productions, right? So, and that's a different conversation, right? Maybe I'll go back and do episode 2 for the bag versus the contract, right? Maybe I'll go back and do an additional episode because that's really a different conversation. But what I really want to talk about is the passion behind why we do things. And I want to expand upon that in different ways, right? So a lot of people think that academia is a space for failed professionals, right? Academia is a protected space for people who have cultivated and created a brand and want to prepare the next generation of professionals, be it entry-level professionals, students, and or those individuals that are already working in their respective fields, right? And that's sort of where the term workforce development is introduced into the academic model. And so a lot of people, they wonder why I lean so much into academia. And just throughout my professional journey, it has been the one space, right? And so we have the business space, right? We have the academic space, and then we have the gospel space, right? Academia is the one space where you don't have to have a lot of money to pursue someone who is trying to copy a brand without making reference to the original source, right? And for me, that is the type of spaces that I like to operate in, right? Academia is the one space that says plagiarism and inappropriate posture, right, of a topic is not tolerated, right? Academia is that one space that takes place, right? Academia is the one space where every individual now has the right to enter into a space to learn, and academia has a responsibility to protect the learning space. And for me, right, and to be honest, academia was the first space that my fellow academics recognized my work, right? That was the first space where other intellectuals begin to raise their voices and say, you're onto something here. You have something here. Please continue to pursue this topic matter and develop it. And push it through the academic channel so that we can learn more from this topic from a safe academic space, right? It is the one space where it begins to develop in many different spaces, but people have a responsibility to offer credit to its original source, right? For example, I think, I know I was one of the first individuals in academia that spoke up and said that youth do not have the ability to make adult decisions at 16, 17, not even at 18, 19, not even at 21, right? It was within the academic space. You have to excuse my voice. I talk all day, every day, right? So it is the first space that I was able to introduce the topic that the adolescent brain is not an adult brain until the age of 25, right? And I tell you all that all the time, that everything about my life is prophetic, right? I married for the first time at 25 years old. That was no coincidence. Once I had the ability to unpack the research around adolescent development, particularly brain activity, adolescents do not have the ability to make cognitive, educated decisions free of outside influence and manipulation until the age of 25. So that means everything prior to the age of 25, that most youth are saying things that out of innocence, that they are acting out of innocence, unless the construct has been manipulated, right? So you can have a youth in, for example, in a junior high environment, saying and doing things, but we have to understand that their thought process has been manipulated by various things, whether that's parental influence, whether that's fellow student influence, whether that's television entertainment, right? That behavior has been manipulated. So when we move forward into high school environments, while the student is conscious of the behavior, it is still within that realm of influence and manipulation, right? And that proper decisions cannot be made independently, right? Without any type of exterior manipulation, where, and so I'm using the word adolescent because the brain technically is not developed into an adult brain until the age of 25. And so the individual technically does not have the ability to understand, measure, and balance what is their original thoughts, what has been manipulated in their environments, and what information has been fed to them intentionally, and what experiences they've been able to encounter that were totally absent of any manipulative massage to arrive at a decision at the age of 25, right? Like the academic phase, the academic space was the first space that I was ever able to walk into an environment and unfold that type of discourse, and it be received as truth, right? And it to be received as an actual beginning of a module of better understanding the adolescent brain behavior and development. The academic space was the first space that I was able to do that. I've recently heard one other person on a public format speak to the same topic, and he referenced the age 25 as well. He doesn't operate in the academic space. He operates in an independent space. However, the first space that I've been able to do that, without someone replicating or duplicating the information that I've offered, without referencing me, was the academic space. And so when people wonder, like, wow, I have the ability to have influence in all three spaces, why is the academic space so important to me? Because the academic space doesn't play about plagiarism, right? It is the one space that we can introduce information and anticipate if someone tries to duplicate it without referencing the original source, then it is plagiarism all day long. It is amazing to me that in the church space, as important as it is for people to be healed, delivered, and set free, that we have no measurement in place for holding people accountable for what they preach on Sunday mornings, particularly in the Christian faith, right? Most spaces, when we talk about religious spaces, organized religion, and various, I don't want to use the term denominations, but various belief, various ways of believing, right? Who God is. Christianity is one of the only platforms that someone can stand on and plagiarize someone else's material or someone else's life and not be held accountable for it. I have experienced people referencing me as a spiritual daughter, and that relationship has not been established, right? And so what happens is when someone takes on the posture of referring to you as a spiritual daughter, although it is a compliment, it offers people in the public the impression that you have had conversations with people that you have not had. And so when they step on their platform and they begin to unpack these sermons that people discern are about people's specific life and events, it's harmful and it's hurtful because people are under the impression that there's relationship there that is not there, right? Christianity is one of the only platforms that I have experienced in my many years that people can pretend to be doing the work or the unction of Christ with no relationship, right? In any other way of doing business, right? Whether it's entertainment, whether it's business, whether it's in academia, there has to be an established relationship, right? Or there has to be a posture of how you deliver the information, right? For example, I wrote the unauthorized business biography of Curtis 50 Cent Jackson, right? Out of common sense, the one way that I knew that I could do that without being sued, right, was to present information that allowed Curtis 50 Cent Jackson to be seen in positive ways, right? You want somebody to sue you, get on a platform and start talking about people in negative ways, right? We've yet to see that lawsuit in the Christian business model. But I foresee it happening because there is not enough accountability, right? In entertainment, you get on your platform talking about somebody, right? I think Carly B sued a woman that was supposed to be some type of entertainment blogger because she jumped on her platform I think Carly B sued her for defamation of character because she jumped on her platform and started saying negative things about Carly B, right? Immediate accountability, right? We know Curtis 50 Cent Jackson, right? He is trigger happy when it is about, he said he wanted his money by Monday. Always suing somebody, right? So there was so much risk and me wanting to pursue telling his story, right? And I did an episode a few weeks ago, and I talked about me wanting to unpack the fear of wanting to tell this story because I see myself in it, and I see my son in it, and I see my brothers in it, and I see I sing so many various people in there that I cared about and loved, that I wanted to unpack the story because I knew that the impact, not only that it would have on the industry, because he was one of the most underrepresented businessmen that I had ever seen, but also because there were so many people who would be able to pick up the story and look at it and see themselves in it, right? Not walking it down a dark alley, but walking it and placing it on a platform in an academic environment where it was safe to unpack the various components of the business model without it being attacked, right? Because to be honest, a lot of celebrities, because of the amount of money that they make, are immediately attacked anytime you try to unpack and tell their story. And I had to defend, like right up front when I started unpacking this story, I had to defend it from the Christian world, right? Like there are some things that you don't touch, right? You don't touch. If I was married, that was one of my untouchables. You don't touch my marriage. You don't touch my child. And you don't touch my academic work, right? And in that order, right? And I had to immediately put a fence up around the work that I was doing on Curtis 50 Cent Jackson, because people who were unlearned and unstudied immediately began to want to attack his personality and his personification because he was a public figure and the amount of money he was making, just the immediate hatred, right, of somebody who makes that amount of money. And so I had to throw up a fence around that immediately. Right. And so this has not been an easy journey, to say the least. And protecting the academic work that I've done and for people to receive it as professional academic work, it has not been easy. And so and then people were like, and you're doing this for free, right? But the passion to want to see the people that I love and care about to see themselves in this story and know that they have the ability to be the next Curtis 50 Cent Jackson, that they have the ability and the resilience, right, to push through all of the negative narratives that life has tried to push on you. And when I talk about the innocence of childhood, right, and that adolescent brain, Curtis 50 Cent Jackson, when you hear Tony Yayo talk about it, he almost talks about Curtis Jackson like he was a drug kingpin at 15 years old, right? And here we were 30 years later still talking about him selling drugs, right? Absolutely, it is an ailment, right, in society. But it was 30 years ago and he was an adolescent when he made, when those actions took place, right? All he knew was all he knew. And in his adolescent mind, this was his way of helping to provide for himself so that he would not be a burden on his grandmother and his grandfather, right? That's the thinking of an adolescent brain. And I am so tired of seeing adolescents be taken advantage of. And us making their actions be about things that they're not about. The innocence of the adolescent brain and us trying to manipulate it and make it something that it's not, and make adolescents something that they're not, and label them and push these narratives as a young lady, right? Pushing narratives about fast ass little girls, right? But we're talking about adolescent brains, right? And what has been the influence of why this particular little girl has responded the way she has responded out of innocence, not even knowing the totality of what the behavior looks like, right? Just having fun, right? Same thing with little boys, right? Referring to boys as thugs, right? At adolescent ages, right? That's pretty much what we would have referred 50 Cent as, a thug, right? Taking adolescent behavior, pushing narratives on adolescent minds, them responding in innocence, and then us manipulating it as adults and pushing it on other adolescents so that they see their peers in certain ways that is absolutely contrary to what's taking place in that adolescent mind, just responding out of innocence. That is why the internet is so dangerous. That is why academic environments are so important. That is why teachers and professors are so important to the development of youth, right? And so for me to tell this story about Curtis 50 Cent Jackson and unpacking the business model without touching any of the personal spaces of his life allowed me to show what happens when we allow people to fully develop, right? And to understand what the capacity and the ability of an adult 25-year-old brain has the ability to do when it's been cultivated in environments that are conducive to the nurturing of the spiritual, the academic, the intellectual, and the social ability of an individual. Absolutely the most important. Academia is absolutely one of the most important derivatives. And if you don't have the ability to get it in academia, then it is just as important to be able to receive it and retrieve it from your family environment or from an environment that has been cultivated to act like family, which sometimes that's community, sometimes that's church. That's very different. And sometimes that's just any adolescence just needs one person to believe. One person to believe, right? And it is the passion behind all of that that brings me and pushes me to lean into the academic space, right? Because any other space that I've presented information in, we have these vultures, right, that take the information and massage it into whatever they want it to be, and it loses its original intent. And it becomes something that it was never intended to be, right? If I could tell you the number of movies and short films and particular, and I'm talking about Christian movies as well, and people preaching that have not experienced the culture, right? But have taken the information from this space and jumped on platforms and begin to cultivate sermons around topics that they've never lived, right? It's dangerous. For people to take information that I presented on this format and to hear it from me, right? They have a negative opinion, right? To hear it from me, they draw a negative opinion and have an offense about it. But then you look up and they've created a movie about the exact same things. Like I was on this platform and I told a testimony about when I was writing and reading and really cultivating my prophetic gift and an experience that I had with something in nature. And when people first heard it, they was like, oh, that is so unrealistic. That's this, that's that. Oh my goodness, I can't believe she told that publicly. Now there is an entire Christian movie around it. And that particular topic is the focus of the movie, right? And there is no one in the movie that looks like me. And I am not receiving any royalties from the movie. And I'm not just saying that because there were just Caucasian characters in the movie. I've seen just as many African American films that have taken information from this space, right? And cultivated into a movie and created a narrative that is so false, right? And I talked about it very specifically about an actress. She was an African American actress, someone that I look up to, right? As an inspiring actress. Someone that I look up to and I anticipated and expected more out of her as an African-American woman to allow herself to be a part of a film that was so detrimental to the narrative of African-American women and raising their children and what the African-American family looks like, right? Because entertainment has an impact on society. And so when they say, why did I lean more into academia? Because it is that space where plagiarism is not tolerated, right? But we have to find a way. And that's why my heart is so vested with the writers in the entertainment field. And when I think they're still striking. Because, like, they are missing out on money and how they have the ability to support themselves. Because AI is part of what is part of the problem, right? As it relates to not just writers, but actors and actresses and what that looks like, right? For holding people accountable. To duplicating somebody else's creativity, right? But they're not receiving royalties because of streaming services and blogs and even this and radio shows in the form of podcasts, right? And how do we get that under control? How do we hold people accountable? How do we ensure that the people who are the original creators and innovators of the content, that they receive just due, right? It's biblical, right? It's biblical. You're worthy of your honor. Sometimes that honor is just honor between people, right? Sometimes that honor is compensation, right? And so that's a conversation that we must unpack. And it makes so much sense why Curtis 50 Cent Jackson so easily will sue somebody, right? Because You have to have the ability to protect your brand. And before he was in the position to be able to just sue people, right? I can only imagine, like, we see the things that have had a major impact. I can only imagine the number of lawsuits that take place behind the scenes that we never hear about or know anything about, right? But you have to be able to immediately hold people accountable. And that's why I don't have any problem with coming on this platform and saying, you know where you got that information from, and you did not offer any credit or compensation to its original source, and it's wrong. Right? And when I talk about accountability, I'm saying that it is wrong not to compensate people when they are vested in experiences, right? Because there is something that is birthed out of an experience. And so if I had to, if I was raised in an environment where gangs were prevalent, and if I had to become part of a gang in order to survive, and if most people don't make it out of that, right? And if I make it out of that and have the ability to tell my story, because of the apparent danger of that situation and the emotional turmoil of making it out of that situation, birth something out of that individual, you absolutely, unequivocally do not have a right to get up on your platform and create a fake story or narrative about what you think you saw, right? And telling that person's story and you didn't experience that, right? You don't get to stand up on a platform and and this is the craziest thing. I'm going to tell this story and I'm going to be through with it. I was working in an academic environment. And maybe I did not do enough of what I was supposed to do to look into that particular environment. But the person wanted to be so much a part of the culture that they started to do gang signs in a professional environment amongst academic peers, amongst young, influential adolescent minds. And I don't know what the purpose of it was, right? Other than for me, it looked like total ignorance. And what makes people die every day from gang related activity, right? People die every day from gang related activity. You have academic institutions that are located in urban areas where the students are advised not to leave off the campus, right? Within a certain perimeter or vicinity because of the gang violence that is surrounded around that particular institution. And for them to be safe, to stay and to travel within a certain perimeter of that particular academic institution. And then for someone who is supposed to be educated to mock that, for me, that is just the optimum or epitome of ignorance, right? And why do we live in a society that has allowed these sort of things to be okay in the presence of adolescent children, right? like what has happened, and it is our responsibility at the higher education level, and most of my peers, right? This is a conversation that they're like, you need to put, and I'm talking about, and any denomination at any race, right? My academic peers have been like, you have to push that narrative because there's so much in the classroom that we have to massage and try to manipulate, right? In a positive way, because we have to deal with so much of the toxicity that took place before the student makes it to a higher education level. Like all of the false narratives, all of the toxic behavior, all of the things that take place that should have been dealt with, right? And having to massage that student so that they have the ability to make educated decisions by the age of 25, despite all of the false narratives that have been pushed, and to teach them material, right? I'm trying to figure out how do those type of individuals enter into education at the elementary, junior high, and high school level, right? And I don't just feel like that. Like, you can talk to any academic professional, and we are all befuddled. We're all befuddled, right? And I'm talking about the people that are actually in the classroom. We are all befuddled. And I'm not saying that. And so, you know, I've had the opportunity to be in classrooms at the elementary, junior high, and high school level. But as an academic, I've always been looking at it through a different lens and perspective. I've always been looking at it through the lens and the perspective of an academic. And it is one of the most puzzling components, I think, of society right now. Because again, the adolescent brain doesn't have the ability to really compartmentalize and decipher reality from falseness and false narratives from reality. And so in their mind, they create these narratives that are reality, that are absolute lies, right? And then you watch the behavior, and then you watch adults that are supposed to be protective of environments to feed into those environments, right? And you're like, how did this person make it through the background check, right? Like, so the people that are passionate, right, in these elementary, junior high, and high school environments, the ones that are passionate, some of them walk away from the profession because it's unbelievable at watching the people that they work next to operate in these toxic capacities, right? And we're talking about the adolescent brain is not fully developed into the age of 25, right? And then these are the people that make it out into society, right? I'm as a behavioral scientist, I'm unpacking the narrative in its totality, and you find them in professional spaces, right? Because someone didn't catch the activity before the age of 25 to help them remassage what they thought they seen and they heard at an age of innocence, because someone had an agenda about the environment they were working in. And then at the age of 25 and beyond, right? We're talking about adults now, people that are 40, 50, working in respective fields. And me as a behavioral scientist, I'm thinking to myself, what happened that made you think that that was okay? Right? And I posted something. So I made my last post on social media. I don't know, maybe a week or two ago. And I explained to people that, and because of my passion, right, for children, my passion for seeing society move forward, my household has dealt with so much dishonor because I've made it my responsibility to stand up and to use my voice to talk against things that a lot of us know are not right, right? And a lot of people are adults struggling to find the voice to say, this is unequivocally wrong. And the fear of that, right? Like I talk about the fear of me unpacking this unauthorized story about 50 Cent. There are people in your everyday life that see things that have fear and don't know how to address it and to talk about it and to deal with it. Because it's so wrong that people are just in shock that people actually have the unmitigated gall and the lack of social responsibility and the lack of compassion to say and do some of the things that they say that they and do, right? And it starts with one voice. It starts with one student filing a complaint. It starts with one lawsuit, right? It starts with one person, right? And that's how we begin to shift paradigms. And for me, my space and being the one person to shift the narrative and the paradigm was to unpack. And so along, because a lot of people were like, oh, she chose 50 Cent because of this and that. And being a woman, it has not been easy, right? But no, I've been doing this work for 20 years. 50 Cent was the perfect subject matter to unfold the years of research, right? Around people who are outliers just like him, but had the ability to push beyond the narratives that were pushed on him as an adolescent that had nothing to do with who he was, right? Had nothing to do with who he is, just the innocence of how do I survive this environment, right? And so we all have a responsibility to hold people accountable when we know that they're when we know that they are playing on the vulnerability of someone else, it is our responsibility. It is our responsibility to hold people accountable. It is our responsibility when we see false preaching and teaching on platforms, right? And we have people that see it and know it and recognize it and discern it, and we say nothing. There was a time period where the things of God and what was holy was protected. To get on a platform and prophesy about somebody else's life that you never had a conversation with, that you really don't have a vested interest in seeing them achieve and be successful, right? To do that was unheard of when I was growing up, right? Like you just didn't do things like that. When the prophetic voice went forward, when I was growing up, it was always in protective environments. To get on a public platform and to prophesy about somebody that you don't know, that you have no vested interest in, that you've invested nothing in, and to preach on them and to prophesy about them and to tell lies about their children and to make up narratives about their children and to put out images about them and their spouses and all of that. Those people, when I was growing up, would be without a preaching position. Now it's Christian entertainment for us. And then you have the people, which is the majority, who don't have the ability to separate reality from fictional narratives. And so it is the most harmful and toxic thing that you could ever do to anybody, right? And yet we watch people do it on their platforms every Sunday morning. Illustrative and through teaching. And we have yet to hold people. I can probably count on one hand right now, I can think of two voices in Christendom that have begun to speak out against people preaching false narratives on their platforms about people's lives. Right? I can think of only two people. There are so many other things that we could be teaching in on Christian platforms. Like how about healing, deliverance, right? When did we begin to have all of this time to talk about people's lives? How are people getting free? It is beyond me and it is above me, right? It's above me now. I have prayed and prayed and prayed. And I finally seen the release. I'm trying not to speak in my heavenly language, baby, but I seen the manifestation of my prayers. Woo! Ah! And what I know, yeah, is that the angels have been dispatched in the earth, baby, to protect the innocence of people who really carry the oil for wanting to see people healed, delivered, and set free. Our families have been under attack, baby. And when I tell you the enemy don't play fair, Whoo-wee. Every day I tell my son I'm sorry. Every day I apologize to my biological son because he was caught up in the midst of the political battles from people not wanting my voice on public platforms. Oh my goodness. And he is so loving, so caring, so respectful. The woman that he marries is going to be one of the happiest women in the world. I've watched him cultivate into such an amazing young man. One of the few people that I can say does not see color. And he'll check me in a moment if he feel like I say something that's racist, right? One of the most dynamic, amazing human beings on this planet. I am, and I get emotional when I talk about it, because I'm amazed that I've been a part of his journey. Because he is such an amazing individual. And in all of my faults and imperfections, somehow he was still able to pull from the parts of me that the Lord cultivated the right way. And he was still able to pull from his father the things that were cultivated the right way. And he was able to see the toxicity and the things that were wrong and filter it through a lens and a perspective that said, I can still love these two people and all of their imperfections and still not mimic the behavior and the toxicity that I see from the family that I was drawn from. And become my own man. And to watch him do that without the support that he should have received from the people that he should have received it from is nothing but God's grace. So when I tell the story of Curtis 50 Cent Jackson, it's personal for me. And I am so excited about you as a mother, you as a father, you as an aunt, an uncle, you as a single father, a single mother, placing outliers in the hands of somebody that you know, that you love. That has had to deal with controversy and dishonor and disrespect, and still somehow they pushed through and became an amazing individual. If you don't get a copy of Outliers, I don't know what you're doing with your life, because anybody can pick up Outliers and relate to it. It's either you, or it's somebody that you know, or it's you and it's somebody that you know too. So you not only will you have to purchase yourself a copy, but you're gonna have to purchase a copy for somebody that you know and that you love. I want to thank those of you who, I have positive experiences with when myself and my family, are out in public, whether out in public eating or out in public shopping, for those of you that are healthy mentally and emotionally, and you understand my passion for people and you understand my belief, I want to say thank you for being healthy enough to see what I do and support what I do. And then I want to say thank you to those of you who maybe don't agree with some of the things that I say, but are mature and intellectual enough to still behave in maturity, right? And to still understand the usual rules of engagement when you see me. I want to say thank you to every police officer that I've ever had to contact, right? I don't play about me. I don't play about my son. You play with me, you going to jail, period. You play with my son, you going to jail, period. Right? And I just want to say thank you. I do. I want to say thank you to my academic peers. Birthing this thing has been a journey. And then you have the people that intentionally created toxicity because they felt like I would be too much competition for them on a platform, or because my voice is strong and influential and very contrary to some of the things that they've said. And so they created, and I'm talking about large voices, right? I'm talking about giants. And so they created these toxic narratives and deployed these narratives that were false. And I want to say thank you to those of you who were intelligent enough and had enough humanistic ability to say, this is not right, and I am not going to participate, and I'm going to hold people accountable for their behaviors. I want to say thank you to the people that operate at the top of the food chain, who said that my voice is very much necessary, and begin to intercede and intercept on my behalf. That's that. That's all I have to say today. And so this is the Making of the Mogul Radio Show. And thank you so much for joining me for this particular edition, where the dream is free, but the hustle was sold separately. And I'll talk with you soon. If you like to sow into the radio show, you can do so at $SALTROOM. If you like to order your copy of Outliers, you can do so by clicking on the link and ordering it. It is an unauthorized, because I know a lot of times people, they know that I've been able to be in environments with Curtis 50 Cent Jackson. I do not want to offer any appearance that he has authorized this literary work, right? He knows it exists. Has he officially authorized it? Not yet. But it is an unauthorized biography of the business portfolio and business journey of media mogul Curtis 50 Cent Jackson. most importantly, thank you for Curtis 50 Cent Jackson for not suing me. I think he understands and sees my intent. And absolutely, there is, I don't think there's one negative thing. And somebody was like, you can't agree with everything that he says. Like, you can't agree with everything he says that he does. That's not what this is about. I'm not one of his family members, right? I'm not one of his advisors, at least not yet, right? And so it's not about, like, we live in this society that feels like that it is their responsibility to jump on, to create platforms out of pointing out what people do wrong. That is not who I am. That's not the person that I am, right? I was created to bring light into dark spaces, right? And so this is about, despite how a man's journey began as a youth, that this is what happens when we create spaces for people to be able to cultivate their talents and their abilities and to protect their, how they see themselves in relation to others. And I'm not saying that that's the entire story for Curtis 50 Cent Jackson, because we know that it's not. But he eventually met two people that believed in who he was, that started out with one person, right? And then he respectfully sat down at the table of someone else who was willing to see who he was. And because of his posture, he is now. And despite, I don't care, all that stuff, y'all see, like every time I took a snapshot of, it was a list of rappers who became actors or went into the film industry or something like that. And now they were billionaires. And Curtis 50 Cent Jackson is not on that list, right? And it, for me, I'm just laughing, right? Because I've spent the time, right? I've put 3 years into the research. I'm telling you, I know what I know. Curtis 50 Cent Jackson is a billionaire. I don't care how many reports you see. I don't care how many pictures they put up of people, and he's not on the list. I'm telling you that Curtis 50 Cent Jackson is a billionaire, right? I'm telling you now. And his journey is one that has been amazing. And he is an outlier. Many of you that follow this radio show, you are an outlier. Maybe your son or your daughter is an outlier. Maybe your niece or your nephew is an outlier. Whatever the situation is, one thing that is important that I know for my own life is that the right people showed up in my life to push me, to protect me, and to usher me out of environments that were not healthy for me. And that's what prayer does. That's what I see on Curtis 50 Cent's life. And prayer does it, right? And the derivative of dishonor is death. And I said that when the Lord places his anointing on somebody to do something very specific in the earth, not only does he protect that person, but he protects everything about that person and everything that's important to that person. And when we look, and I don't say that lightly, like I don't say death lightly. I'm saying that it is the truth, right? It is the truth. And when we look at somebody like Curtis 50 Cent Jackson, we see people's careers that have died that targeted him. We see people whose personalities, who were just toxic, right? we've seen personalities experience a death, right? I think I can probably even point to a time in Curtis, in his journey where I felt like he was experiencing a spiritual death. But then he was, then you seen the resurrection, right? Of when he stepped into totality of being able to make it through the process, right? For what was specifically for his life. Like we seen his career resurrect right after his bankruptcy. And we see it, right? And we have to protect what we know is right. And the honor, right, that comes upon a person for protecting what they know is right and pushing a narrative that they know is right and healthy. The power that exudes from somebody that's able to stand up and speak for what is right, right? That has the power to stand and dismantle systems and toxic business practices and toxic behavior and toxic leadership. The power and protection that rests on that, and I'm telling you from the other side of it, is unbelievable. It's absolutely, unequivocally unbelievable. And I say that in the most humbling way. I say that in the most humbling way. There is no way for me to fully articulate what I've experienced and what I'm experiencing now. I am more encouraged by humanity now than I ever have been my entire life. In watching people resurrect humanity, right? And in that, we have to stay out of the ignorant spaces, right? You stay out of the ignorant spaces. And when we stay out of the ignorant spaces, those spaces die, right? The only thing associated with dishonor is death. And so if there's businesses that continuously allow people to be dishonored, businesses will experience death, right? Financial death. If there's spaces and places and churches, it doesn't matter. The only thing associated with dishonor is death. I had to tell somebody the other day, sometimes you have to watch. Because sometimes in our humanness, particularly me, like I will meet ignorance with ignorance, right? Because I was cultivated in a different environment, right? And so my knee-jerk reaction is to meet ignorance with ignorance. But every now and again, the Lord will contain me. And the Lord will respond. And I tell you what, the things that I have seen, I can't even, if I told you some of the things that I've seen, you wouldn't even believe it. You wouldn't even believe it. Like you wouldn't even believe it. Like you would not even believe it. Like there's no way that I could articulate the things that I've seen from from the situations that people have placed themselves in that have targeted myself, my household, or my son, thinking that they had some sort of power or ability or authority that they didn't have, right? Because ignorance is bliss. It'll have you thinking that you can do something that you can't do. And so the people that are in power, right, they observe it and they deal with it. And then when I push even beyond that, and I talk about the force shield that is up around myself and my son and the things that I have seen in the supernatural realm, is unbelievable. And the enemy tries to taint anything that is glory filled. Anything that is glory filled, the enemy tries to attack it. And when I tell you that the Lord is still working in the supernatural, baby, I'm telling you, it's unbelievable. And so I did not mean to talk this long. I believe the report of the Lord. I'm not telling you what I heard. I'm telling you what I've experienced. If you don't trust nothing else, you better trust the Lord. That Bible works. Prayer works. The protection of the Holy Spirit works. And it works everywhere, right? Like it don't, like, that's the thing, right? About the anointing. Like whether I go into an academic space, a business space, a public space, wherever I am, the supernatural power of the Holy Spirit is there. And it is what pricks the hearts of man, people in power positions. And it is what moves effectually in the earth to protect those things that I care and I love about. And this is the Making of the Mogul Radio Show. My name is behavioral scientist Tanola Oliver. And this is my rant for today. We're talking about false representation today. And we're talking about the responsibility of holding people accountable for what they say and what they do on their platforms. And until we meet again. Shalom. $SALTROOM. To book Behavioral Science Tanola Oliver, electleadershipacademy@gmail.com or tanola.oliver@electleadership.com. But I would probably, for a more efficient response, electleadershipacademy@gmail.com. And what else? You can order from everything that you support through this particular platform, whether it's the magazine, the bakery, sowing seeds. We appreciate it, and it all goes back towards research and the building of people, right? This Outliers Project and how we can to push the momentum. And thank you so much for trusting my voice and for listening to me and for your encouragement. I'll talk with you soon. Peace.